Today, the Australian economy, it's messy and complicated. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, latest post covering finance and property news. Here's the question for you. Can the Australian economy weak and strong at the same time, or which is it? This is an important question because the answer will determine the future policy directions of interest rates and, frankly, the well-being of ordinary Australians. So I'm going to do a deep dive on this today in the light of the latest employment and wage rise data from the ABS. While the RBA has made inroads into getting inflation under control at 3.5%, underlying inflation still remains above the central bank's 2 to 3% target band. And even though the jobs market has softened, it is still far stronger than almost at any time since the 1970s, as data out today shows. Yet consumers have cut back sharply as they try to cope with 13 interest rate rises by the RBA. And this decline in spending has caused economic growth to grind to a halt. On an annual basis, the economy grew by just 1% in the year to June, down from an average of 2.7% over the past 20 years. Excluding the pandemic, that makes the slowest rate of growth since the 1990s recession. And household financial stress, based on our analysis, is at a peak, as we discussed in our live show this week. On one hand, the RBA remains concerned about the output gap, which is the difference between the actual level of economic activity and an estimate of what would be sustainable. It's a bit like running the enterprise engines. Under Scottish control at 120%, something will have to give. This is what Ms. Bullock means when she says the economy is still a little bit hot. The level of spending in the economy is still unsustainably high, and it's leading to excessive inflation. That's based on the RBA's best estimates. While the gap between actual activity and the sustainable level has narrowed, thanks to successive quarters of weak GDP growth, the RBA thinks further quarters of soft outcomes will be needed to close the gap completely. The sustainable level of spending, known as potential output, is the amount of activity which would be consistent with the RBA achieving its goal of keeping inflation between 2 and 3%. This means the RBA needs to hold rates higher for longer, even before the Trump effect, as I discussed yesterday. Yet Chalmers disputes the RBA's suggestion that the economy is too hot, given the weakness in household spending. It would be hard to sustain an argument, given the national accounts and growth figures that we've seen this year, that the economy is too strong, Chalmers said on ABC Radio last month. Growth in the economy is quite weak, and the labour market has been softening a little too. The unemployment rate has come up even as we've created 1 million new jobs. So Chalmers is right that households are under the pump. Once adjusted for inflation, Australian households recorded the largest fall in disposable incomes across the OECD over the past 2 years. That's reducing the purchasing power back to the 2017 levels. Discretionary spending has been declining since about September 2022, when adjusted for inflation and population growth, as consumers try to make do in an environment of high inflation and rising interest rates. In fact, Australians' run of hiring gains slowed in October, while the unemployment rate held steady, which underscores the resilience of the labour market to elevated interest rates. Consumers are cutting back on clothes, alcohol, furnishings, food, and recreation activities, like going to the movies, though they are still making space in their budgets to dine out at cafes and restaurants. Consumer spending data from the CBA confirms that older households, who are more likely to own their home outright, have fared much better than their younger counterparts over the past couple of years. Spending on discretionary goods and services, such as holidays, travel, and entertainment among CBA customers aged 65 and over increased by 4.8% in the year to June. In contrast, spending on non-essential items declined among customers aged under 34. Older households have also saved more thanks to higher interest rates. CBA customers aged 65 and over recorded a 7% annual increase in account balances, while customers aged 54 and under had to dip into their savings to meet higher rent and mortgage repayments. Chalmers says that the federal government is doing all it can to help the RBA, including by delivering two budget surpluses. But some economists say that state and federal governments have made the RBA's job harder by increasing spending at the same time the central bank is trying to cool the economy. Government spending hit a record high of 27.3% of GDP in the June quarter, and Westpac estimates that figure will hit 28% of GDP next year. The RBA itself in August signalled out the growth in government spending as one of the reasons it no longer expected underlying inflation to return to target until the middle of 2026. Yet the extra government spending has helped keep the jobs market humming along, fueling a surge in government-funded jobs as employment rose by 15,900 last month compared with a forecast 25,000 gain. That's according to ABS statistics data that was released on Thursday. The jobless rate was unchanged at 4.1%, while the participation rate edged down to 67.1%. The ABS said with employment rising by around 16,000 people and the number of unemployed up by around 8,000, the unemployment rate remained at 4.1%. This was the third month in a row that the unemployment rate has been at 4.1% on a seasonally adjusted basis. This is around 0.6 percentage points above its recent low of 3.5% in June 2023, but is 1.1 percentage points below March 2020, when it was at 5.2%. While employment grew in October, the 0.1% increase was the slowest growth in recent months. The Wages and Jobs Report, together with a monthly inflation gauge due later this month, will be important inputs for the RBA's December policy meeting, when it's expected to keep rates at a 13-year high of 4.35%. Economists reckon the RBA's next move will be down, with the first cut seen sometime next year. Governor Michelle Bullock signaled last week that rates will need to remain elevated for now, as underlying inflation remains too high. The RBA's board this month described Australia's labour market as tight, saying that while conditions have been easing gradually, some indicators have recently stabilised, pointing to youth unemployment and underemployment rates. Unemployment has indeed ticked up from post-pandemic lows, and the RBA expects it to peak at 4.5% by the end of 2025. There is very limited read-through from the labour data for the market and for the RBA, said Prashna Nuhaha, senior Asia-Pacific rate strategist at Toronto Dominion Bank in Singapore. At a minimum, there needs to be a string of weak jobs prints for the RBA to switch to an easing bias over the coming months. Right now, we're not there. Season-adjusted monthly hours worked rose by 0.1% in October, in line with the 0.1% rise in employment. That was the 6 month in a row where hours worked grew at the same rate as employment. Since the start of the pandemic, growth in hours worked has been more varied than employment. However, in recent months, we have been seeing a more consistent relationship between them, the ABS said. The proportion of employed people who worked fewer hours than usual in October was around its pre-pandemic levels. The underemployment rate fell by 0.1 percentage point to 6.2%. That was 0.2 percentage points lower than October 2023 and 2.5 percentage points lower than March 2020. The underutilization rate, which combines the unemployment and underemployment rates, remains at 10.4% in October 2024. That's well below the 13.9% recorded in March 2020. And across the states, the unemployment rate varied significantly, with the ACT at 3.1%, Queensland at 3.9%, and WA at 4%. It's the same rate as New South Wales. But the NT was at 4.6%, Victoria was at 4.5%, and South Australia at 4.2%. The contrast between New South Wales and Victoria is of particular note. Compared with what we saw before the pandemic, the unemployment and underemployment measures are still low, while trend employment and participation measures are at all-time highs. This suggests the labour market continues to be relatively tight, the ABS concluded. The truth is, of course, that even though the unemployment rate is rising, it is not because people are getting fired. In fact, the share of workers losing or leaving their jobs is at near record lows. Instead, there has been a surge in the number of people looking for work, including migrants and previously disengaged Australians, plus people seeking more hours or extra jobs just to get by. These new entrants have pushed rates of workforce participation to those record highs. While employers have been hiring, they are not quite matching the pace of population growth, which is causing the unemployment rate to rise. It's also worth comparing the employment trends with wages growth because, of course, the two are linked. First, public sector wages increased faster than private sector pay for the first time in 4 years in September as a slowing jobs market drove salary growth to an almost two-year low. Annual wage growth fell to 3.5% in September from 4.1% in June. That's according to the ABS data that came out on Wednesday, as pay growth slowed on the back of a cooling economy. Overall, Queensland recorded the highest quarterly wages growth at 1.6%, while the ACT recorded the lowest quarterly growth of just 1%. Tasmania recorded the highest growth at 4%, and Northern Territories recorded the lowest annual growth at 3%. The figures, which were a little weaker than expected, underscored the continued slowdown in the private sector jobs market, where employment growth has eased over the past couple of years due to high interest rates. Public sector pay has proved more resilient to the recent economic slowdown, though, fueled by a surge in spending and generous state and federal government pay deals. The public sector includes workers employed directly by governments, including public servants, teachers, nurses, and the police. The Reserve Bank of Australia last week admitted that it had been surprised by the magnitude of the recent rise in government spending when it released its annual forecast review. Public spending is at a record 27.3% of gross domestic product and has been blamed by some economists for prolonging inflation. In new research released on Wednesday, the Australian Industry Group said government stimulus was obscuring the increasing weakness in the private sector jobs market. Employment across sectors, including hospitality and wholesale trade, fell in the last financial year, they said. The public sector, however, experienced a record rate of jobs creation in 2024. This shows that Australia's labour market resilience has becoming more increasingly reliant on government spending. As state and federal budgets are under increasing fiscal pressure, the medium-term sustainability of this spending path is uncertain, Chief Executive Innes Willicks said. With inflationary pressures lingering, money markets are not now fully pricing in for the RBA to deliver its first post-pandemic cash rate cut until perhaps September next year. That's after the next federal election. The recent period of high inflation has driven real inflation-adjusted wages to 2011 levels, fueling voter anger over cost-of-living pressures. Treasurer Jim Chalmers said that the data showed that real wages were growing again. At 3.5%, Chalmers said wages growth was stronger now than any period under the former coalition government. But of course, the CPI excludes mortgage repayments, and other data from the ABS showed that the real cost of living for many with a mortgage is around 6% at the moment, so they're still going backwards. We have a two-track economy as annual growth in private sector pay eased to a two-year low of 3.5% in September from 4.1% in June, the ABS said. NAB senior economist Taylor Nugent said the RBA would be encouraged that the tight jobs market had not prevented wages growth from slowing. Given sluggish productivity growth, the RBA will still need to see some further easing in the labour market and better realised inflation outcomes to be comfortable on its inflation trajectory, he said. While public sector pay growth eased to 3.7%, the declining government pay rises have been more gradual, and September marked the first time since December 2020 that growth outstripped the private sector. The majority of the employment growth over the past year was in industries that are primarily government-funded, including education, healthcare, and social assistance, fueled in part by the ballooning $49 billion National Disability Insurance Scheme. The extra hiring caused the total costs of state and federal government wages to increase last financial year at its fastest pace in 15 years. That's according to figures released last week, fueling economists' warnings that government spending is helping to keep interest rates higher for longer. EY senior economist Paula Gadsby said ongoing underlying inflationary pressures, low productivity growth, elevated government spending, and a tight jobs market meant that the RBA would leave the cash rate on hold until 2025. The December quarter is the most common time of year for workers to receive a pay rise, as many enterprise agreements and awards reset on July 1. The minimum wage increase of 3.75% on July 1, and the ABS said 45% of employees nationally received a pay rise during the September quarter. Pay growth for public servants accelerated sharply over the last year and a half after state premiers abandoned salary caps following pressure from unions and essential workers. New South Wales Premier Chris Minns this week reached an in-principle agreement with 17,000 police that offered non-commissioned officers an increase of 22.3% to 39.4% over 4 years, and commissioned officers 20.5% to 27%. The decision risks fueling a broader wage blowout, as up to 65,000 nurses and midwives in New South Wales walked off the job on Wednesday to push for an immediate 15% wage increase. Although the Albanese government has pledged to fund wage increases for aged care, childcare and disability care workers, those pay rises would not be entirely captured by the ABS as public sector wage gains, since most beneficiaries are technically employed in the private sector. And bear in mind too that, as the ABS says, wage rises for many jobs can be directly or indirectly linked to the outcomes of the Fair Work Commission annual wage review decision. The latest decision for a 3.75% wage increase paid from 1 July 2024 was lower than the September quarter 2023 increase of 5.75%, and it was also lower than the Commission's September quarter 2022 award increase of between 4.6% and 5.2%. Sydney adjusted, annual public sector wage growth was higher than private sector growth for the very first time since December 2020. And of course, not all wage rises are equal. Geologists, engineers and trades such as carpenters and electricians were among the occupations that landed the largest salary bumps last financial year as employers struggled to find enough workers to power the country's energy transition. Research from consultants Mercer found that the median total annual salary increase awarded to Australian workers was unchanged at 4% over 12 months to June 30th. But the report, which painted a picture of a gradually weakening labour market, revealed some in-demand roles landed pay rises well above 10%. Entry-level professionals at Mercer's broad-based science job family topped the list of roles that received the highest salary bumps in the 2024 financial year, covering everything from chemists and production research scientists to geologists and hydrologists. Roles in this category and a median pay rise of 19.6% over the year to June 30th. The median base salary in this group was $82,000. The rest of the top 10 was made up of various engineering positions, as well as call centre workers and tradespeople focused on repair and maintenance, such as carpenters, electricians, plumbers and welders. Entry-level site safety and environmental engineers came in second place, with a median salary increase of 13.2% in the median base pay of $85,000. Computer-aided design operators and engineering design assistants rounded out the top three, registering a median salary bump of 13.1% and a median pay base of $116,000. Cynthia Cottrell, the leader of Mercia Pacific's workforce consulting and products business, said the dominance of science, engineering and trades roles in the top 10 was driven by a combination of government infrastructure projects and the ongoing worker-hungry energy transition. As Cottrell said, organisations were handing out significant pay rises in those occupations because they were technical professionals in short supply and had high barriers to entry. They require accreditation, and it's not easy to train people up, she said. The figures, based on responses from almost 1,300 Australian organisations employing more than 444,000 workers, referred to the annual salary increase given to employees who stayed in the same job at the same company. And they also indicated employers had increased salaries by a mean of 4% across the economy last financial year, with 1 in 5 employees receiving a pay rise greater than 7%, down from 1 in 4 in 2023, and 12% had their wages frozen. That's up from 8% in 2023. Bernadette Foley, acting chief engineer at Engineers Australia, said other reports and industry sources pointed to similar trends in salary increases of engineers to those reported by Mercer, as the industry made up for sluggish wage growth from 2016 to 2021. It's important to recognize that the primary challenge isn't just shortage of qualified engineers, but it's a suitability gap, Ms. Foley said. Jobs and Skills Australia report that many engineering roles have sufficient applicants, yet many lack the employability skills or work experience that employers seek. Unconscious bias may also play a role. And according to JSA's analyst of Australia's clean energy workforce last year, the nation will probably need close to 2 million workers in building and engineering trades by 2050. That's roughly a 40% increase. So we have an economy driven into overdrive by high migration and big government spending, forcing interest rates to stay high for longer, and yet with low unemployment rates and people working until they drop. None of this is helping to improve productivity, and the share of the economic cake continues to shrink on an individual household basis. And those in the rental sector, or with a large mortgage, of course, are under the pump. And my point is this: bad policy over a couple of decades has got us to this point, but unless we radically change direction, this messy and complicated journey will continue to the detriment of many ordinary Australians and businesses. There is frankly no Goldilocks zone here. And so the truth is that Australia is both booming economically and also being crushed economically. And of course, people are being caught in the crossfire. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au, and if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer.
I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.